Shall we turn now to the book of Ezra as we continue our study through the Bible? We begin tonight in Ezra chapter 4. In our last study at the end of chapter 3, they had just laid the foundation for the new temple with the mixed emotions. The young people shouting for joy and excitement over the fact that they were rebuilding now the temple. The older people who remembered the glory of Solomon's temple, they were weeping. And so much noise was going up, you couldn't tell the difference between the noise of those that were rejoicing and shouting for joy and those that were weeping over the contrast of the pitiful beginnings compared with the tremendous glory that was Solomon's temple. And the noise was heard afar off. So when the adversaries, chapter 4 of Judah and Benjamin, heard that the children of the captivity were building the temple unto Yahweh, the God of Israel, then they came to Zerubbabel, who was, of course, the governor that was placed by the Persian king over Judah. And they came to the chief of the fathers, and they said to them, "Let us build with you, for we seek your God, as you do. And we do sacrifice unto him since the days of Esarhaddon, the king of Asshur, which brought us up hither." Now, when the northern kingdom of Israel was captured and destroyed by the Assyrians repopulated the populations in other areas, and they brought foreigners in to live in the cities of Samaria. However, the wild animals went on the rampage, and many of the people were destroyed by the wild animals. And so they sent to the king of Assyria, and they said, "Look, we don't know the customs of the gods of this land. We need some people who have lived here and knew the customs of the gods, that we might worship those gods so that, you know, we won't be attacked by the animals." And so the Assyrians sent back some of the priests and some of the people of Israel back into the land in order to teach the people the customs of the Lord and the worship of the Lord. These people then sort of amalgamated their worship with the worship of the Lord, tried to combine their pagan forms of worship with the worship of God. These people were later known to be Samaritans. They were a mixture, not true and full Jews. They were a mixture of the other races. And they were rejected by those Jews that returned from captivity. And as a result, a tremendous animosity developed between the Samaritans and the Jews. You remember during the times of Christ, that animosity existed. That Jesus would rarely pass through the country of the Samaritans, but coming from Galilee to Jerusalem, would usually come down the Jordan Valley to Jericho and up from Jericho, because they didn't like to pass through the land of Samaria because of the strife and the friction that existed. When Jesus did pass through the land of Samaria, you remember when he asked the woman for a drink of water, she sort of questioned and challenged him. She said, "Why are you asking me for a drink? You're a Jew, I'm a Samaritan. We don't deal with each other." Later on, however, Philip went to Samaria and preached the gospel of Christ unto them, and there was a tremendous revival. Many believed and were baptized at the preaching of Philip. Today, there still exists in the area around Nablus Samaritans. Their ranks have diminished. There's only about 210 or 11 Samaritans left in the world today. They are looked upon as a off-brand religious sect. They still, interestingly enough, on Passover, offer a Passover lamb on Mount Gerizim. They still have animal sacrifices on Passover there on Mount Gerizim. Now, you remember the woman that questioned Jesus said, "Our fathers say we're to worship God in this mountain, you say in Jerusalem." And on Mount Gerizim, they still worship God. However, because they are so small now and they will not marry outside of the Samaritan group or ethnic, they won't marry outside their culture. Most of the Samaritans today are sort of idiots because of the inbreeding. And so they are mentally deficient. They are rather weird and odd. And they feel that this will probably be the last generation of Samaritans because of the difficulty the inbreeding has created. And so they expect the Samaritans to die out within the next generation. Now, this was really the beginning of the animosity. They came and offered their help to Zerubbabel. But Zerubbabel rejected their offer for help. They said, "We seek your God as you do." Not fully. They sought Jehovah. But as it says, they offered sacrifices unto Jehovah, but they served their other gods. So they were not full in their worship or service of God. They were they honored God, they respected God, they acknowledged the God of Israel, Yahweh, but still they served their other gods. There are people today who acknowledge Jesus Christ. They believe in Jesus Christ. They believe that he was the Son of God, that he died for their sins, and yet they serve, when it comes to the actual service, they are serving their other gods. But Jesus said you can't serve two masters. And yet how many people are endeavoring to do that today as they pay lip homage to Jesus Christ, but really, if you look at their lives, it isn't a life of real total commitment to Jesus Christ. But they serve their other gods. They serve Asherim or Baal or Molech or Mammon, though yet honoring Jesus with their lips. Thus were the Samaritans, and Zerubbabel wanted nothing to do with a watering down or a weakening of the worship of the Lord. It is true that they were offering the sacrifices, but still they were also worshiping their other gods. So Zerubbabel and Joshua and the rest of the chief of the fathers of Israel said unto them, "You really have nothing to do with us to build a house unto our God, but we ourselves together will build unto the Lord God of Israel, as King Cyrus, the king of Persia, has commanded us. And that, as I say, began the friction between the Samaritans and the Jews. That's when they said, hey, Jerusalem isn't the place anyhow. Mount Gerizim is the place that God placed his blessing. It was Mount Gerizim where Abraham brought Isaac and offered Isaac as a sacrifice. And this is the place where we should worship God. And thus, this is the beginning of that division that has continued to the present day. And so the people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Judah and troubled them in building. It really indicates that their heart wasn't in serving or worshiping God or helping them. The moment that their help is rejected, they turn against them and seek to hinder the building of the temple. They hired counselors against them to frustrate their purpose all the days of Cyrus, the king of Persia, even unto the reign of Darius, the king of Persia. So during this period of time, and this Darius is not the Darius that we dealt with earlier. This is a second one whose name was Darius. And he came along later in history. So during this period of time, there was the effort to hinder. Now, we have what is actually a misconception, I think, in that we oftentimes believe if I'm serving the Lord and doing my best to serve the Lord, then everything ought to be easy and smooth. There ought not to be any problems. But you can be sure if you're on the right track, Satan is going to try to throw the switch. And if things are really going smooth and there are no problems and things are just rolling along and all, then you better examine the road you're on. They that live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. I hate that promise. But it nonetheless is a statement of the Scripture. It is not easy to live the Christian life. The Christian life is not without its difficulties. It's not without its hindrances. You can be sure the moment that you make a real commitment to follow Jesus Christ, there are going to be all kinds of stumbling blocks placed in the road. Satan is going to try to detour you from that commitment. He's going to try to hinder the work of God in your life or the work that you seek to do for God. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, against these spiritual entities and forces. And Satan will always seek to hinder the work of God. And so we find that the people of the land sought then to hinder the work. They hired the counselors to frustrate the purposes during the reign of Cyrus all the way until the reign of Darius. And in the reign of Ahasuerus, now this is not the husband of Esther, which we will get to when we study the book of Esther, but this is the Cambyses of secular history. And he reigned from 529 to about 521. So in the reign of Ahasuerus, in the beginning of his reign, they wrote unto him an accusation against the inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem. And in the days of Artaxerxes, wrote Bishlam and Midradath and Tabeel, and the rest of their companions unto Artaxerxes, the king of Persia. Now this Artaxerxes is called in secular history Pseudo-Smerdis. pseudo because he was a usurper to the throne who followed the Cambyses, and he took over the throne of Persia, but reigned for only a period of 10 months. Very short-lived reign, and was succeeded then by Darius, who we will come to in chapter 6. And so during this time of this Artaxerxes, and that is not the Artaxerxes that we'll get to when we get to the book of Nehemiah, who gave the commandment to Nehemiah to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. But this is in secular history. This guy Smerdis. And so during the reign of Smerdis, they wrote this letter. And this basically is the essence of the letter. They said, all of these groups that have inhabited this land, and we get a bunch of names here that I'm not going to try and mess with in verse 9, but these were the names of the ethnic groups that dwelt in the land that had come in and populated the area at the time of the Assyrian Empire. And their names describe the ethnic area that they had come from and their nationalities. And these nations or these people, along with the rest of the nations, whom the great and noble Asnapper brought over and set in the cities of Samaria, and the rest that are on this side of the river and at such a time, this is the copy of the letter, verse 11, that they sent unto him, even unto Artaxerxes the king. Thy servants, the men on this side of the river, probably meaning the river Euphrates, at such a time, be it known unto the king that the Jews which came up from you to us are come to Jerusalem, and they are building the rebellious and the bad city, and they have set up the walls thereof and joined the foundations. Now, there is nothing that we know of from Scripture to indicate that they had started work on the walls. However, it is quite possible that they did. Nehemiah was the one that was commanded to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. Zerubbabel and Joshua came with Ezra with orders to restore the temple. To rebuild the temple. That's what Cyrus felt that his mission was, is the helping of the rebuilding of the temple. And so they said they've actually started to build the walls and joined together the walls. Now be it known to the king that if this city is built and they build the walls again, then they will cease paying the tribute, their taxes, the customs, the tolls, so that the king's revenue is in danger. You're about to lose out on money that would be forthcoming. And now they say, because we have maintenance from the king's palace. In other words, we've been set here as governors to oversee this, and we are paid by the king to take care of the king's business. And to protect the king's business, we have maintenance from the king's palace. It was not right for us to see the king's dishonor. Therefore, we have sent this message to certify to the king the things that are going on. So they come off as men who are concerned for the king's welfare. We're hired by you, we're paid by you, and we felt it was necessary to write to you and warn you about these things, because we see a danger developing. If they build the walls, they're going to rebel, and it's going to be bad news. Now we suggest that you search the book of the records of your fathers, and you will find in the history books the fact that these people are a rebellious people, and they're hurtful unto kings and provinces, and they have moved sedition within the same of old time, for which cause the city was destroyed. True, if he searches the records, he'll find that after Nebuchadnezzar conquered the city of Jerusalem, three different times they rebelled against the Babylonians until Nebuchadnezzar finally, in the last siege of Jerusalem, destroyed the city. He destroyed the temple. He broke down the walls of the city, broke down the houses, just left the city a rubble. The first two times, he just took captives and he took treasure. But the last time, because they continued to rebel, he just destroyed the place. So if he searches the history books, he's going to find that they are correct in this assertion. Therefore, we certify the king that if this city is built again and they set up the walls, you're going to be cut off on this side of the river. I mean, these guys are going to lead in a rebellion and you're going to lose this big chunk of your province. So the king sent an answer to Rehum, the chancellor, and to Shimshai, the scribe. The word chancellor there is the governor. Rehum was the one who sent the letter, and Shimshai his scribe. And to the rest of the companions that dwell in Samaria, unto the rest beyond the river, peace at such a time. Now the letter which you sent to us has been plainly read before me. And I commanded, and they searched. And it is found that this city of old time has made insurrection against kings. Rebellion and sedition have been made within the city. There have been mighty kings also who reigned over Jerusalem, and this probably is a reference to David and Solomon's reigns. For they have ruled over all of the countries beyond the river, that is on that side of the Euphrates, and both under David and Solomon's reign, the extension of the kingdom was all the way to the river Euphrates, and the peoples paid their toll or tribute unto David and Solomon. So, hey, I've studied the records, you're right. So, give now the commandment to cause these men to cease, that this city be not built until you get another commandment from me. And so don't let them do anything till you hear from me. And take heed now that you fail not to do this, for why should damage grow to the hurt of the king? So this fellow Smerdis sent a cease and desist order. They put up a red tag, and they ordered the building of the city to cease. But notice, it was the city. Cease building the city. So when this copy of King Artaxerxes' letter was read before Rehum and Shimshai, the scribe, and their companions, they went in haste to Jerusalem unto the Jews, and by force they caused them to cease building. And so the work was ceased on the house of God, which is at Jerusalem. So it ceased under the second year of the reign of Darius, the king of Persia. Now, as I said, Smerdis only reigned for 10 months. And then he was deposed, and Darius became the king over Persia. And in the second year of the reign of Darius, we find a change of decree. And so the work only ceased for a little over a year. And then the prophets Haggai and Zechariah prophesied unto the Jews that were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of the God of Israel, even unto them. Now, as I said last week, it would be to your benefit, in conjunction with the reading of the book of Ezra, you'll be helped immensely if you'll read the book of Haggai, which is only two chapters, and also the book of Zechariah, because they were prophets at this same period of history, and their prophecies relate to these things. Now, they are mentioned here that Haggai and Zechariah prophesied to the Jews in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of God. And Zechariah chapter 1 tells us that Haggai, in the first chapter of Haggai, it says, "Is it time for you, O Israel, to dwell in your sealed houses, and the house of the Lord lays desolate?" Now, take a look at what's going on. You're planting a lot of seed, but you're reaping small crops. There's a drought that's going on. God is seeking to get your attention. You are trying to gather money, but you put it into your purse, but the purse has holes in it. Your money isn't going very far. You're running into all kinds of difficulties. And Haggai said, the reason is, you have turned from the work of building the house of the Lord, and you're thinking of yourself first rather than God first, and putting yourself first above God and your personal needs above the Lord. God's just let you experience a real spiritual drought in your own lives. So you gather in a lot, but you really have nothing. You're short. And Haggai was encouraging the people to get back and to finish the building of the house of God. And we find the same thing is true in the prophecies of Zechariah, as he was encouraging Zerubbabel and Joshua, the leaders of the building. And he gives the vision that he has of this period of time. And so if you'll read those books, they'll dovetail right here in the fifth chapter, as it tells us that Haggai and Zechariah were prophesying at this particular time. So then rose up Zerubbabel and Joshua, and they began to build the house of God, which is at Jerusalem. And with them were the prophets of God helping them. So this group of fellows, I mean, they weren't just prophesying. They got in and started doing the work. I like that. I don't have much confidence in a person that just tells me what I ought to be doing if he isn't willing to get in and do it himself. Tell me that I ought to be sacrificing, but they're not willing to sacrifice themselves. Sort of troubles me when Oral Roberts asks me to go to the bank and borrow money so I can send it to him, when he has an $800,000 winter home in Palm Springs. I wrote him and said, "You sell your home and I'll go to the bank and borrow money." You know, there's always those guys tell you what you ought to be doing, but unless they're willing to get in and get their hands dirty and do some of the work themselves, it doesn't really go very far in my book. And Zerubbabel and Joshua were working together, and the other prophets of God were helping them. And at the same time, this governor, Tatnai, came to them, and they said unto them, "Who commanded you to build this house and make up this wall?" That would be the wall of the temple. "And then said we unto them after this manner, 'What are your names?' of the men that are working on this project. I mean, they were trying now by intimidation. All right, fellas, what's your names? Who gave you the authority? Who commanded you to do this, you know? And give us the names. And they were seeking by intimidation to discourage them and to cause them to quit. But it says, the eye of their God was upon the elders of the Jews, and these men could not with their threats cause them to cease until the matter came to Darius. And they returned answer by letter concerning this matter. And the copy of the letter that Tatnai, the governor on the side of the river, and Shethar-Boznai and his companions, which were on that side of the river, sent to Darius the king. This is basically what they wrote. Unto Darius the king, all peace. Be it known unto the king that we went into the province of Judea to the house of the great God, which is built with great stones. Now, an interesting thing, this word great stones in the Chaldean language is rolling stones. It has long been a mystery how in the world they were able to move such great stones that they used in building the wall and building the temple. In the wall, the western wall of the Temple Mount, there are stones that are 8 feet thick, 5 feet high, and up to 45 feet long. Estimated to weigh over 100 tons. And the mystery is how in the world they ever lifted such stones into place on the wall. Or how they ever moved them. I mean, do you imagine how many men it would take? And it's been a mystery for a long time. Here was suggested, perhaps, how they did it. And it is interesting, as they have been excavating in what is known as the Rabbi's Tunnel, which by the time we go to Israel next year will be open to the public. We will be able to go inside the Western Wall, and in the Rabbi's Tunnel we will be able to go all the way up to Antonio Fortress and see these excavations that have been going on for years. And when you do, I've been up there, when you do, you will see this one stone 45 feet long, 5 feet high, and 8 feet thick. But also in the excavation of this tunnel, they found a stone that was half rounded, and the other sides were squared off. And they've come to the conclusion that the ingenious way by which they got these stones from the quarry to the building site was that when they first quarried these stones, they quarried them round and they rolled them. Now, of course, you can understand the ease of rolling a stone. Trying to lift a stone like that or use pry bars and to scoot it, it would be almost an impossibility. But by, first of all, quarrying it as a round stone, it could be rolled into site. And then they feel that at the site, they flattened off the one side and then they rolled the stone into position so that the flat side came down, flat side met flat side. And then when it in position, they then chipped it off and quarried it while it was in position. So here, as it says, great stone, the word great there is rolling. And so they said that they were using these rolling stones. It was built with the rolling stones, and the timber is laid in the walls. And this work is going on fast, and it is prospering in their hands. And so we asked the leaders, and we said to them, who commanded you to build this house? What are your names? In order that we might certify to you and write the names of the men that are the leaders among them. And they answered us, saying, we are the servants of God, the God of heaven and earth, and we build the house that was builded these many years ago, which a great king of Israel built and set up. So they didn't tell us their names. They just said they were servants of the God of heaven and earth. And they were just rebuilding this temple that had once existed, built by a great king of Israel. But they told us that after our fathers had provoked the God of heaven unto wrath, he gave them into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, the Chaldean, who destroyed this house and carried away the people to Babylon. But in the first year of Cyrus, the king of Babylon, the same King Cyrus made a decree to build the house of God. So they're claiming that some guy by the name of Cyrus, and this is back in the year 536, and now we are some 16 years later, 520, And so they had come pretty far along in the building of the house. And they said, Cyrus, the king of Babylon. Now, Cyrus was called the king of Babylon, as was Darius, after the city of Babylon, the great city of Babylon, was conquered by Persia. He was also called the king of Babylon because he conquered Babylon. So don't let that throw you, Cyrus, the king of Babylon. He was the king of Persia. But having conquered Babylon, he also took the title King of Babylon. And other of the kings did that. You'll find that the Persian kings were often called the King of Babylon. The same King Cyrus made a decree to build this house of God. And the vessels also of gold and silver of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple that was in Jerusalem, brought them into the temple of Babylon, those did Cyrus the king take out of the temple of Babylon, and they were delivered unto one whose name was Sheshbazzar, who he had made the governor. And his other name is Zerubbabel, and that's the name by which we know him. And it is easier than Sheshbazzar, so I'd suggest you use Zerubbabel. Many of them had two names. You've noticed we've said that Artaxerxes was actually the Smyrtus of secular history. You remember when Daniel was taken captive unto Babylon, that they gave him a Babylonian name. Belteshazzar. And his friends, Azariah and Hananiah, were given Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach. And so often you'll find two different names, Babylonian name and the name in Hebrew, or the name in Chaldean and the name in the Persian language. So then came this Sheshbazzar, and he laid the foundation of the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. And since that time, even until now, they've been building it, and still they aren't finished. I mean, these guys have been going for 16 years. They're not through yet. Now, therefore, if it seems good to the king, search the libraries, the records, which are there at Babylon, and find out whether or not this is so. Find out if a decree was made by Cyrus the king to build this house of God at Jerusalem, and let the king send his pleasure to us concerning this matter. Now, these men again are suggesting, search the records. Let's find out if these guys are telling us the truth or not. We want to know. So Darius the king made a decree, and they searched in the house of the scrolls, or the books, where the treasures were laid up in Babylon. And there was found at Achmetha in the palace that is in the province of the Medes a scroll, and therein was a record that was thus written. In the first year of Cyrus the king, the same Cyrus the king made a decree concerning the house of God at Jerusalem. Let the house be built, the place where they offered the sacrifices. Let the foundations thereof be strongly laid. Let the height of it be 90 feet and the breadth of it 90 feet. And with three rows of great stones and a row of new timber, let the expenses be given out of the king's treasury. And also let the gold and silver vessels of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar took forth out of the temple, which is at Jerusalem, and brought to Babylon, let them be restored and brought again to the temple that is in Jerusalem, every one to his place, and place them in the house of God. Now therefore, Tatnai, governor beyond the river, Shethar-Bozenai, and your companions, which are beyond the river, be ye far from thence. Let the work of this house of God alone. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews build this house of God in this place. Now, I love it how the Lord so often turns the tables. You remember with, of course, the story of Joseph and his brethren. Jealous of their younger brother, they decided to kill him. And then they opted to sell him as a slave to traders going to Egypt. And they sold their brother. Hard-hearted, they would not listen to his cries as he was carried off to Egypt, weeping and crying and asking them to have mercy. But they were so calloused and jealous of him that they did not respond to his cries. And later on, when God exalted Joseph in Egypt, and his brothers had to come down to live under the rule of this brother who they had despised and so mistreated, when their father Jacob died, they came trembling before Joseph, feeling that, hey, now that dad is dead, you know, he's going to just wipe us all out. He's going to get even with us now. In those days, you remember earlier with Jacob and Esau, Esau said, as soon as dad dies, I'm going to kill you, man. The reason why he wouldn't kill him while his dad was still alive is that he was afraid his dad would curse him for killing his brother. I don't want the curse of my father on me. So as soon as dad is dead, man, you've had it. You're finished. And so often they would wait until the death of the father to take it out on their brothers so that their father wouldn't curse them. They didn't want the curse of the father lying on them. And so when Jacob died, they thought, oh man, we've had it now. Joseph's going to get even with us. He's going to wipe us out. And so they came trembling to Joseph, you know, to seek mercy, but they did not show mercy to Joseph earlier. But as they came to Joseph, he said unto them, now I know that what you did, you intended for evil. You had evil intents, but God meant it for good. God had a purpose that was greater than what you realized. And though your hearts were evil and you had evil intents, God has meant this whole thing for good, that he might preserve the family. And Joseph said, go and live with your families, and don't worry, I'm not out after blood. I'm not out to destroy you, because God has intended good out of this. And so many times, God has taken the evil intentions of man and turned them around for good. We're in a few weeks going to get to one of my favorite stories in the Bible, the story of Esther. And there is a classic example of how God took the evil intentions of Haman and turned the tables on the guy. And here, God does the same thing. These guys are thinking, boy, we're going to shut down this project. You know, and they send their letter expecting. But you see, the first letter that came back from Artaxerxes was to cease building the wall, but he made a mistake. He didn't say anything about the temple. So these guys ceased the wall, and they just concentrated on building the temple. So now they come back and they start giving him a hard time on the temple. Who ordered you to do this? And what are your names? And so they sent their letter, expecting, of course, Darius to send back a letter, cease and desist, you know, and to stop them. But instead, the tables are turned, and listen what happened. I love the way God does things like this. Darius sent back the letter and said, let the work of this house of God alone. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews build the house of God in his place. Moreover, beyond that, I make a decree. What you shall do to the elders of these Jews for the building of this house of God, that the king's goods, even the taxes that you collect there, take out for them the expenses and give it to these men that they not be hindered in their work. So the taxes that you're collecting, you know, make sure that they have enough money to just continue the work, that the work not be hindered. And that which they have need of, both of young bullocks and rams and lambs for burnt offerings of the God of heaven, the wheat, the salt, the wine, the oil, according to the appointment of the priests which are at Jerusalem, let it be given to them day by day without fail. Not only are you not to touch or hinder these guys, help them with the money that they need and with the things for sacrifice, that they may offer sacrifices of sweet savors unto the God of heaven, and that as they do, they pray for the life of the king and his sons. Have them pray for me and for my family. Also, I have made a decree that whosoever shall alter this word, let timber be pulled down from his house, and being set up, let him be hanged on the timbers. In other words, anybody tries to stop them, take down the timbers of his house, make a gallows and hang the guy. And let his house be made a dunghill for this. Now, it is interesting that the Jews to the present day sort of practice the destruction of the houses of those who create disturbances in the West Bank. If they come into your house and find dynamite or contraband, they just blow up the house. And this was the decree that was made clear back in the book of Ezra. And the God that hath caused his name to dwell there, may he destroy all kings and people that shall put their hand to alter and to destroy this house of God, which is at Jerusalem. I, Darius, made the decree. Let it be done with speed. Oh, man, how God turned the tables on these guys. And then Tatnai, the governor on this side of the river, and Shethar-Boznai and their companions, according to that which Darius the king had sent, so they did speedily. I mean, they were subject to this guy, and so they had to follow the orders. And the elders of the Jews built, and they prospered through the time of the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo. And they built and finished it according to the commandment of the God of Israel and according to the commandment of Cyrus and Darius and Artaxerxes, the king of Persia. And this house was finished on the third day of the month of Adar, which was in the sixth year of the reign of Darius the king. And so it was finished in the month of March, just in time for the Passover. You know, it is interesting how that many times when you have a building project, you set your target date to complete it on, say, the holidays. We want to be in by Easter, or we want to be in by Christmas, you know. And so they no doubt, and that helps spur, you know, you have a target date. We want to be finished by this date. And so they no doubt had set, boy, next year, by the time Passover comes along, let's be through with it so we can actually have a big Passover, you know. We can celebrate at the Passover feast. So they finished it in the month of Adar, which is, of course, in our calendar, the month of March. In the sixth year of the reign of Darius the king. Now, they sent the letter in the second year. They had been building for 6 years at that time. And so it means that they were about 20 years in the rebuilding of the temple. And the children of Israel, the priests, the Levites, the rest of the children of the captivity, they kept the dedication of the house of God with joy. Dedication day, they're going to begin again. They offered at the dedication of this house of God 100 bullocks, 200 rams, 400 lambs, and for the sin offering for all of Israel, indicating again that there were members of all 12 tribes that had come back, they offered 12 he-goats according to the number of the tribes of Israel. And they set the priests in their divisions, the Levites in their courses for the service of God, which is at Jerusalem, as it is written in the book of Moses. And so the whole process of worship again was established in Jerusalem. Temple worship, it's restored. And the children of the captivity kept the Passover upon the 14th day of the first month. For the priests and the Levites were purified together. All of them were pure. That is, from a ceremonial sense, so that they could offer the sacrifices. And they killed the Passover for all the children of the captivity, for their brothers and the priests and for themselves and the children of Israel, which were come again out of the captivity. And all as such had separated themselves unto them from the filthiness of the heathen of the land to seek Jehovah God of Israel, did eat of the Passover. And they kept the feast of the unleavened bread for 7 days with joy. For the Lord had made them joyful and had turned the heart of the king of Assyria unto them to strengthen their hands in the work of the house of God, the God of Israel. And so the glorious conclusion to the building project with the dedication and the observing again of the Passover, the reestablishing of the worship and the priesthood, the courses, and the whole thing as was set up by David originally. And so set up by David on paper, Solomon carried it out. So we come now to chapter 7, and we will come into that in our next study, chapter 7 and 8, and then we will finish Ezra with chapters 9 and 10. So your next assignment is chapters 7 and 8. Now, inasmuch as I won't be here next Sunday, it gives you 2 weeks, which means you have to read Haggai and Zechariah. In order to get the full background. So you've got plenty of time to do it. And so I want you to jump to Haggai and Zechariah and read these prophecies in these 2 weeks that we have in order that you can get a full background to this study in Ezra and Nehemiah, which we will be moving into next, because they are both tied together with the two prophets. But may the Lord be with you, watch over and keep you in his love, strengthen you by his Spirit as we seek to do the Lord's work. And may the Lord turn against the enemy every ploy that he might institute against your walk. May he turn it around. And though the enemy may intend it for evil, may the Lord turn it for good, that you might see the good hand of God upon your life, enabling you to be the man, to be the woman that God wants you to be, filled with his Spirit, walking in the Spirit, an instrument that God uses to bring his love and his grace to others through Jesus Christ.